listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where each week we help you travel better and cheaper. We keep an eye on the best travel news, deals, and tips, and we package them up for you each and every week. I've got two great segments this week. The first one up is one I've been chasing for quite a while. Zach Honig from The Points Guy, who traveled over 300,000 miles in 2017, sits down with the Miles to Go podcast to go over what last year looked like, what this year should look like, and some really cool things he's got coming up. I really had a ton of fun recording with him, and since I was already up in New York, I grabbed Emily McNutt again for another segment. She came back on to talk about Norwegian Air. She's been on with us before to talk about that. This is an awesome opportunity to fly in one of the best seats out there, period, a suite on a plane for less than $500. You're going to want to stick around and hear about that. Before we get there, I got just a couple of tidbits of news. Some of these are time sensitive, so I want to make sure we touch on these as reminders. I don't want folks to miss out. For starters, we're getting down to the very end of summer shopping bonuses. That means that the airline portals, most of them still have back-to-school bonuses for things that you might buy through their shopping portals. It's a great way to pile up the miles on things that you are already going to buy. And don't just think about back-to-school supplies here. Think about other things that you might buy, laundry detergent, paper towels, all that sort of stuff. This is a great time to stock up on that stuff and make sure you can hit those bonuses before they expire. Next week is when they pretty much all wind down. Next week is also, actually end of this week, is when we get the official crossover from Starwood to Marriott on the 18th, which means if there are any properties that are going up in price, the number of points it requires to book an award night, you're going to want to make sure you do that before August 18th. Now, we know there are a whole bunch that are going to go down in price at the top level, but don't lose sight of some of those value redemptions. Easy one is Walt Disney's World, Dolphin, and Swan. You know, those are going to go up in price when the 18th rolls around. So if you think you've got another trip to Disney World coming up, now is the time to book it. You can always cancel later and redeposit. Another date coming up, August 26th, is when new rules go into effect for how you can get sign-up bonuses for the new Marriott and SPG credit cards. It's a murky mess, and if you're not sure how to navigate it, I'm not really either, but you can listen to the segment that Richard Kerr and I did two weeks ago, about how to navigate that murky water. Still not 100% sure what things are going to look like, but make sure you listen in and read Richard's post so you don't lose out on a sign-up bonus. Lastly, if you're holding on to a Marriott travel certificate, it sounds like those are going to convert to a different certificate with a value that's going to be similar to what it is today. So you should be able to redeem it for a similar value property in the new program. But new reservations and changes to reservations are expected to be offline for a month when the new program rolls out on the 18th. So I wouldn't be surprised if that date stretches. If you know what you need to do, book it now. Don't wait. You still have time to book one and transfer miles as well, although only a few more days. That's what I've got for news and notes this week. Hope you enjoyed those, and I really do hope you'll take note of those dates that we have coming up. There's a bunch of things that you need to get done in the next week or so if you want to make sure you maximize this switchover from SPG to Marriott. With that, I'm going to step aside for a quick second. We'll be right back with Zach Honig of The Points Guy to talk about over 300,000 miles of travel in 1 year, which is just plain crazy. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. If you're a family traveler, you might enjoy another of my favorite podcasts. Whether it's your first trip to Disney World or your 50th, yes, I'm guilty of that, Disney Deciphered should definitely be on your list. The hosts, Joe and Leslie, have been guests here on Miles to Go. Each week they release a new 15-minute episode that covers a Disney World topic in depth. Need an intro to Magic Bands? How about an advanced strategy for Fastpass Plus? Leslie and Joe definitely have you covered. The episodes are short and to the point. They get right to the point, helping you make the most of your Disney dollars. Gosh knows you'll spend plenty of them when you visit. Find Leslie and Joe at DisneyDeciphered.com or on Apple Podcasts. Let's get back to our show. We still have a few miles to go. Hey, and thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast. This week I'm hanging out at TPG headquarters in New York, short for The Points Guy. And it's kind of a fun one for me in that I've got Zach Honig, who's an editor-at-large for The Points Guy. And I've known Zach for a couple of years with tweets back and forth and following his trip reports and joking about stuff on the internet, but he and I have never actually met. So this is the first time that we're sitting in the room together, and we're making a second attempt at trying to record a podcast segment because I am technologically challenged.
And the first one was perfect.
It was absolutely perfect. So here we sit again trying to sound cute and interesting and all that good stuff.
Can I make that joke about the weather again?
Sure.
It is hot in New York today, I have to say.
It is disgusting.
We're both sweating, even though it's probably about 65 degrees in here.
Yeah, it's disgustingly hot outside. It's supposed to be disgustingly hot, I think, all week. Why I wanted to record was you had a really jam-packed 2017. And, in your review of 2017, you said, hey, my goals for 2018 are, and I'm paraphrasing, but I want to travel less. Mm-hmm. I want to explore my hometown in New York a bit more. But I also want to continue to write content that everyone finds interesting. And so a lot of what you write I find interesting, and so I want to check in on what 2018 has looked for you and what you've done so far that you find interesting and compelling.
Yeah, so just to recap, I would say 2017, I'm hoping, is going to be the busiest year travel year I've ever had and ever will have. I think it was a total of 333,000 miles.
Yeah.
And that's not EQMs or PQMs or elite qualifying miles. That's actual butt and seat miles.
And that's like hard to do. To fly that much, that's difficult.
Tough. Tallying that up took about a full day, I'd say, for that post. It was a lot of travel. But kind of my goal that year was to hit Million Miler with United. And so I think I started the year probably at around 850,000, maybe 900,000 miles. And then by the end of the summer, I had a million miles with United. And so I had heard that benefit might be devalued at some point.
Yeah.
And so I set that goal of end of 2017 to hit the mark. And that required quite a few mileage runs. And so I was flying around quite a bit more than I needed to for work or even really had a desire to. but once I checked that box, I really felt free. And so as a million miler with United, my status won't drop below gold. And I get to share whatever my current status is with anyone I want. So my sister is currently a Premier 1K. She travels for work, but barely enough to get silver. So
yeah.
She's been getting upgrades left and
right. Oh, that's
great. And she's been loving it. So.
And you got to take your mom on your million miler flight, right?
Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day. I knew about maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks in advance, exactly which flight it would be. It was Hong Kong, San Francisco. And so I invited my mom to come along. She was available, and it seemed like it would be a really fun trip. And we definitely made the most of it. So we stayed at the Ritz-Carlton Hong Kong for a couple nights, got upgraded to the club level in the club lounge, and then had that really special flight to San Francisco.
That's awesome.
So that was 2017.
Yeah.
But my goal for 2018 was to travel less, and I am accomplishing that. Sorry.
So it wouldn't be hard to travel less, to be clear, but how much less do you think you're traveling?
I would say maybe at most a third of what I was traveling in 2017.
So a normal crazy pace. Just for clarity for most folks out there, flying 100,000 miles a year is tough, and I would say most of the people listening probably don't fly that much, but you still think you're going to hit that century mark.
I probably will. I'll hit 100,000 miles this year. Definitely. My goal is always to kind of maintain Premier 1K with United.
Sure.
And I do have a few business or first class flights that are booked in business or first class, which earn more miles. But for the most part, it's butt in seat. And I'm almost all the way there already. And so I only have a couple trips planned for the rest of the year, which I'm sure I'll add one or two on.
Yeah,
but right now it's feeling pretty good.
As most of your flying accruing United PQMs, has it been on United Metal, or have you been doing some of the partners?
Mostly United Metal. I'm trying to even think of the flights. I mean, it was a lot of back and forth within the U.S., a few flights to Europe. I know I flew to Asia at one point. It kind of all blends together once you start flying that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as the rest of the year, I have my longest, or I guess what will be my, tied for longest flight ever planned. And that is New York to Singapore on October 12th. So that'll be the inaugural flight for Singapore 21.
Yep.
Or re-inaugural, I guess you could say, because that used to operate daily from Newark to Singapore with an A340-500.
Right.
This will be the first time that replacement aircraft is available, and that's the A350-900 ULR, which stands for Ultra Long Range.
And that is an ultra long range flight. What's the time block for that?
It's blocked at, I think, a bit over 19 hours.
Yeah.
And when I flew it last time, which was just before it ended in 2013, it took us 19 and a half.
Mm.
And so almost 20 hours on the same plane. I remember we were somewhere over in India because we had an eastern route that day. And I'm just like, you know what? I really wish we were connecting in Delhi or something. It was all business class, but, you know, even by then, I think I had finished my third meal of the flight. And I'm just like, you know what? I want to get off. It's a long trip, and I haven't minded breaking it up since then. But it's going to be an exciting inaugural for sure.
Well, and interestingly enough, if I recall correctly, doesn't the new config have premium economy?
It does, yeah.
So could you imagine flying that? So get on the plane, take an 8-hour nap, wake up, have a meal, and you're still not even at the halfway point.
Oh my God.
And you're in a premium economy seat.
I imagine at some point in my life I may fly premium economy on that route, but I'm not rushing to do that. So I've got business booked, thank God.
Yeah, I think I might do that sooner than later if I were you, because from my standpoint, as I get up in age, I don't know that I could do 19 hours in something that wasn't a bed at some point.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm looking forward to it because I know it'll be a fun inaugural, but, there's been a lot of great award availability on that route, actually.
Yeah, I saw you wrote about that. You said whole family availability.
Yeah, for as many as six people I've found on the same exact flight in business class at the saver level, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I've booked absolutely zero of those saver awards just because I'd rather break it up.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to experience something unique, the world's longest flight, and what I imagine will remain the world's longest flight, I would get on that. There's still a saver award availability
That's crazy.
Recording, at least.
That's just crazy.
Hopefully it'll stick around.
So before we logged on, you had mentioned one of the things that you enjoyed this year, which is a sort of an envious thing for me, was attending the Farnborough Air Show.
Yeah. So Farnborough is quite a beast. I've heard it described as the world's largest air show.
Yeah.
I haven't crunched the numbers myself, but it certainly feels that way. And so it's a tricky air show to cover, to be honest, because most of the hotels are in London, but with the traffic, it ends up taking 2 to 3 hours each way
to
get out to the show. So I had booked a bed and breakfast, normally about $50 a night, that was marked up to $350 during the air show. Right across the street, though.
Oh, wow.
No air conditioning. Barely July, had internet.
Yeah.
I think there was one power outlet, but made the most of it. But I mean, so many great opportunities to see some really cool new planes. And so, actually, you know what? The highlight for me is something that you can actually fly on already, and that is the former Singapore A380.
Yeah.
That's made its way to HiFly, and right now is filling a big gap for Norwegian as the Dreamliners are grounded.
Yeah, that's the coral reef-painted HiFly?
Yes, save the coral reefs.
Yeah.
So outside, exterior, completely different livery, but inside it's identical to the Singapore Airlines configuration, old A380 config.
Yeah. It's bizarre to think about. I think in terms of our lifespan in this industry, I think about the fact that I've seen the A380 be birthed, if you will, and now we're seeing the first ones retired, which is sort of odd in that I think, at least from my standpoint, I think it's the first plane I've really seen birthed and retired in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it's like the 787s are really any that are quote unquote retired at this point.
And you don't really see that happen in just a decade,
right?
I mean, this plane's only been flying for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And so it's I'm so glad that it's not sitting in an airline graveyard somewhere.
Yeah.
It's flying daily most of the time. Passengers have a really unique opportunity to travel on an aircraft that would normally be much more expensive to fly on. So you can actually book currently premium economy on Norwegian, and seats are assigned at random, but you can end up in the suites cabin, so you can fly in that double bed, a famous Singapore double bed, for about $1,000.
I think that's pretty interesting. And I think the other thing that's kind of as I look in the future trying to figure out is, where does that plane go next for HiFly? Because I don't imagine it stays with Norwegian past when they solve the engine problems.
No,
I'm just trying to think of, where else can you put an A380 just on a sort of a wet lease?
Yeah, so I've heard it's headed to Reunion Island, I believe.
Really?
Between Paris, I think, and Reunion Island. Yeah. I don't know how long it'll be on that route, but it'll be filling gaps all around the world. So,
yeah.
I mean, this plane, I kind of, you know, I envy the crew in some ways, but they really don't know where they're going to be having their layovers. I mean, they could be layovering in New York, you know, every day for a month.
I know.
And then maybe somewhere less desirable for, you know, the next month or two.
So yeah, they're limited, obviously, by the, there's only so many airports that can actually handle the that plane.
And speaking of which, and I think you're going to maybe talk to one of my colleagues about this as
well. Yeah, Emily and I are going to chat some in depth on the Norwegian.
All right, we'll save it for that.
Yeah, they're, suffice to say, we'll tease just a little bit. There are some problems right now with the joys of Norwegian and Singapore. You know, as you look towards the rest of the year, are there any trips on the horizon other than the Singapore trip that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, one coming up next month. I can't go into detail on it just yet, but it's going to be really cool, and I'm going to get to go to Africa for the first time.
Oh, wow.
So I've been to Morocco, but, you know, sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
And so that's something I'm really looking forward to. I'm actually going to, afterwards, I'm going to join my girlfriend's family on a trip to Sicily.
One of my favorite places.
Yeah, which, believe it or not, I'd never been to before this year, but I just did a family trip to Sicily in, I think it was March.
Yeah, yeah, this would be your second time.
My second time this year. Yeah, so we're going to be hitting a few of the same spots. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a vineyard, winery-focused tour through.
I don't remember, did you do the east coast of Sicily, or did you do west?
We did both, So we flew in and out of Catania, but then I was doing an awful lot of driving on that. They've got a new highway out there, which really makes it easy to get around.
Yeah, it does. I've driven through most of Italy, and Sicily I've found is one of the easier places to
really?
Get around.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Driving in Naples and those areas, not quite as easy. A lot of road construction generally the times I've been and stuff like that. So
my one mistake was driving into Palermo, which I would not recommend. Yeah. Very tight. And we did not have a tiny car. So
I haven't been to Palermo yet. I've done all just that East Coast, Catania, Termina, Messina, those areas. So
yeah. So, Ed, I don't know if you get to talk about this much, but do you have any trips that you're really looking forward to this year?
You know, it's a little bit of a thin year for us. We stayed closer to home. So I don't have anything truly exciting. I was actually hoping to get on the Singapore flight at some point this year, but it's one of those, you know, number of hours in the day sort of things and how long I'd be away from the family. That's sort of on the radar. The other thing is we were waiting for our son to turn 8 to go back to Australia. The rest of the family has never been, and we wanted to do bridge climb. Unfortunately, it just shut down because they're changing operators. So I'm trying to figure out if there's going to be a different age restriction and all that. So we're sort of holding on that trip as well. So that was the plan. It was like, great, he's going to turn 8. We're going to do bridge climb. And then, you know, just making sure that I don't book a bunch of tickets and find out they changed the minimum age to 10 and, you know, we get over there and can't do
it. Right, exactly. Yeah. That's actually one huge advantage of having elite status is that you can cancel awards and then redeposit them for free. So if I think, you know, there's just a small chance even that I might take a trip, I book an award ticket. And I would say I end up canceling and redepositing those probably 90% of the time.
I do too, and I think that you're right. And especially for me with families and, you know, changing school plans and stuff like that, I think the interesting thing when people talk about some of the flexible currencies, and I want to segue to a question on credit cards here in just a second, but you know, I think it's, you know, people talk about, oh well, you know, use your Chase Ultimate Rewards points to buy airline tickets because you may be able to get good value that way. And to some degree, I agree, it's become more valuable through that path. But the problem then there is once you have a paid ticket, the cancellation fees have gotten, you know, quite lofty, especially when you talk about international cancellation fees. So the flip side of that is, as long as I have elite status, I have this ability to continue to tweak and change an itinerary as much as I want.
Mm. And you have to go through the travel agency too to make any changes, which adds a complication, I would say.
I've heard enough, I wouldn't say horror stories, but I've heard enough agitation from people that I sort of still like the path for me, at least for transferring. And I think that's a great segue into, you know, tell folks if you had to pick right now one credit card only to keep in your wallet.
You know, honestly, it's going to be the Chase Sapphire Reserve.
Yeah.
And I currently have about, I want to say 55 credit cards, open accounts, just because I like to try them all, you know. We write about all the cards, and I mean, there are many more out there beyond the 55 I have. But, but as far as the ones I actually keep with me all the time, it's Chase Sapphire Reserve, City Prestige, because you never know when you're going to need to book a fourth night free stay.
Yep.
And I also put my airfare on City Prestige because of the, you know, great protections that you have there. Although that was recently devalued.
Yeah.
I have my Amex Platinum card because of the purchase protection.
Yep.
And then the Chase Sapphire Reserve is my go-to. Almost all of my spend goes on the reserve, and then anything that doesn't earn a category bonus, I put on my Freedom Unlimited card that I have in my wallet as well.
Yeah.
Just because, effectively, that earns a point and a half. Ultimate rewards points, yeah. So that's, you know, based on our valuations, a bit over a 3% return.
Yeah.
Which is not bad at all.
So. No, not bad at all, especially given what you can redeem for the value. You can actually get those sort of high-value redemptions where I think some families will take cards like that and they'll think that they're going to get that sort of value, and then they end up using them to, you know, fly to, you know, Kansas to visit family, and they don't get that upper value out of
it. Yeah. I just had this debate with my girlfriend, actually, because she was like, why do you pay for flights? You know, why do you ever pay for flights? Because we went up to Boston for the weekend, and I have the Ritz-Carlton card, so I get $100 off economy airfare through the Visa Infinite program. And so in total, it was about $130, I think, round trip for each of us.
Yeah.
And it would have been 20,000 United miles because of the, you know, the discount.
Yeah.
This is a short haul flight. And she said, well, you know, why you have so many miles, why don't you use miles? And so I explained, you know, the
math.
The valuation. Yeah. And once you factor that in, she still thinks that we shouldn't ever pay for flights. But I'm saving them up for something special.
Yeah.
Which does come across from time to time. Yeah. We actually met in the Maldives. We didn't meet in the Maldives, we flew separately to the Maldives back in May. And she flew Lufthansa first class with my United miles.
So,
we could do 4 round trips to Boston,
right? Or Lufthansa first,
exactly. So I think she's starting to catch on. But I would say Chase Sapphire Reserve, and then what I do is I transfer those points to United.
Yeah.
Primarily. Hyatt is also a very strong partner.
Yeah.
So you can transfer instantly to United or Hyatt, and then get I would say, you know, at least, you know, 3 cents per point in value. But I've gotten much, much more, you know, through my first class bookings with United.
Awesome. Well, guys, that's a full wrap. Zach, thanks again for joining us. We'll love to have you back on the podcast soon, maybe after that Singapore 19-hour flight.
Give me a couple days to recover, but then I'll be back.
Maybe get you right as you get off the plane so we get the delirious Zach.
I had to do a video last time. Just
That's great.
19 hours in.
All right, well, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, well, we take a quick break from Miles to Go. I wanted to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts. If you're enjoying my podcast, I think you'll also like Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Steven, Seth, and Foz are the hosts of the first travel podcast I ever listened to. Seth has already been a guest on Miles to Go a few times, and I'm hoping to have Steven and Foz on here at some point as well. These guys know the travel industry. You'll find them talking about cool new airplanes, crazy trips they're taking, Stroop waffles, and the best way to get from here to there. Though, given the name of their podcast, they don't specialize in the shortest way to get you there. At any rate, you can find Dots Lines at moredotsmorelines.com or on Apple Podcasts. Now, back to the show. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. I'm hanging out pretty much all day today recording at the Points Guy headquarters in New York. And Zach did a good job of teasing us into our next segment. I've got Emily McNutt back on the podcast. If you'll recall, Emily was on with us just about 2 months ago, and we talked about IAG trying to eat Norwegian alive and acquire them. And now we're back to talk about a really interesting plane that Norwegian has flying right now. Thanks for being back on the podcast, Emily.
Yeah, happy to be back discussing a very special plane.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I never thought that I would see the birth and retirement of a plane in my lifetime. So, you know, the 787s are out, and, you know, I guess some may be retiring by the time I pass away. But in the span of 10 years, we've seen these first Singapore A380s get retired. And now that leads us to a company called HiFly leasing this plane to Norwegian, and Norwegian using it to serve the London, New York market.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, these planes that were once, you know, at the forefront and still are of aviation, kind of going to the graveyard, but being revived by this wet lease operator. It's kind of remarkable to watch how it's all unfolded so quickly.
Yeah.
To see Norwegian, a low-cost carrier who, you know, is known not only for its kind of issues that it's been having with its Dreamliners, which, of course, has led to this. But, you know, it's known for its cheap fares and this kind of whole thing. And then you see the A380 operating for Norwegian. And it's kind of like this mind-boggling, yeah, like, scenario. It's like, what's going on right now?
And not just any A380. When you talk about outfitting a plane of this size, a double-decker that, you know, generally holds, call it, 500 passengers, Singapore had these planes outfitted not just with lots of economy seats, but they had their business class cabin. And then what makes this flight truly original is the Singapore suites, these beautiful, spacious suites that are now flying on a low-cost carrier route.
Right. Yeah, you kind of nix that Singaporean suites, but you keep the suites,
yeah,
there. I mean, we sent one of our reporters to fly on the first Norwegian tagged A380, yeah, high fly flight. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to think he was saying, you know, I'm flying low cost
Singapore
across the Atlantic in a suite. It's just like a wild phenomenon. And,
yeah,
you know, it's really amazing for passengers to have, yeah, this experience. You know, and Norwegian kept the price tag there.
I know.
The famed Norwegian price tag of, you know, a premium ticket. You can fly New York to London for less than $700.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah, and to add in the possibility that you can do that in a suite, a former Singapore suite.
Yeah.
You know, they kept the outfittings, mm-hmm, the same. So you're looking at a very nice hard product.
Yeah.
Though the soft product wasn't entirely there.
Yeah, you've got the Norwegian meals. But I think the interesting thing, and you know, you noted this when you covered this for TPG, it's a maybe a slightly better percentage chance of Russian roulette in that you can't actually select the Singapore suite seat. You're randomly assigned to it if you buy a premium seat and you're assigned to the business class cabin on this high fly plane, you may end up in one of the suites.
Right. It just seems so bizarre. It seems like a miss for me. It's a huge miss in my eyes,
yeah,
for Norwegian. I mean, here they have this opportunity to upsell one of the best first class products in the sky.
Yeah.
When it first came, not only when it first came out, but also currently, it's,
yeah,
still, you know, up there, this closed suite, almost,
yeah,
fully enclosed. But, you know, that's a price tag of 10 grand when Singapore was flying it, if not more.
I know.
And here you're offering it for $700-ish.
Yeah.
It seems like a miss. And, you know, I think that because Norwegian doesn't have anything longer term than end of August or near end of August for this A380, this high-fly A380, I don't know if it was something on the back end that they didn't want to kind of separate the suites out, price it up.
Yeah.
Or what the rationale behind that was, but it seems like a miss that they could have been able to either upsell it to existing premium passengers or just offer it for new bookings.
Yeah, I think there's something that they probably could have done there as well, and I think the only thing I can think of is there's obviously an ongoing engine issue with not just Norwegian, lots of carriers that have engines on some of the newer planes out there that are grounding those planes, and they're having to scramble for these aircraft. And the majority of the airlines that are affected by this are affected on planes that fly long distances. So when you talk about things like this high-fly 380, if they want to be able to continue to operate these routes, they don't have a whole lot of choices. And I just wonder if the panic of having to fill the route network with a variety of planes. You know, Zach and I didn't get a chance to get to it, but his review of the Wamos Air 747 that they had flying, I just wonder if that's so much of a distraction right now, just trying to fill the routes, that they can't get to focus on something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something since these Trent engine issues came about that,
yeah,
you know, Norwegian, we talked about this last time I was on the show, but like, you know, I kind of feel bad for them in that,
yeah,
they're ordering these brand new planes. They have this great business model, essentially, if,
yeah,
all goes according to plan, and which it didn't. So I think it is something that's kind of been on the back burner for Bjørn Kaas,
yeah,
and the rest of the Norwegian team, you know, is that how are we going to be able to offer the service as we continue expanding to new parts of the globe, Argentina, I mean, around the globe, with our main aircraft, or most of them at least,
being crippled.
Yeah, exactly. So I think and again, like, this isn't a long-term solution for them.
No.
I mean, they have to give up the A380 August 23rd.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that they're probably thinking next up, what are we going to do on this JFK Gatwick route next?
Yeah.
So I think it is something that maybe they just didn't put enough, or they didn't have enough resources on hand to be able to put into that pricing structure.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting that, you know, along with trying to fit the A380 onto the route, given the seating and all that stuff, they're also having trouble with the size of the plane and the number of available gates at JFK that can accommodate an A380. So the flight has actually seen some considerable delays the last handful of days as of our recording. I don't know if they'll have that solved anytime soon, or if it's just something that they're going to have to ride out for the month.
Yeah, it seems like this was along the same lines as, you know, this being a rushed, all hands on deck, we need to get this figured out stat type of problem, because JFK, you're talking about one of the most severely dense airports in the world.
Yeah.
And adding an A380, the largest commercial jet out there, to the equation at kind of a moment's notice.
Right.
I don't think it was entirely thought out how that was going to work. And like you said, the past four nights, I believe, the flight to Gatwick has been delayed till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And so not only are you talking about passengers growing frustrated with the delays and kind of why they haven't switched the schedule yet, but then you're also talking about EU compensation that could potentially be getting doled out to each passenger that files a claim. So the burden there is kind of still looming in that Norwegian's, you know, facing setbacks from this financially.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how they're going to handle it going forward. Are they going to switch the flight times now, presumably, if they want to release the HiFly A380? They would have more time to think about what they're going to do with it.
Not sure that they can. I think it has other places to go. And I also think, too, I mean, I guess things might get a little bit less congested at JFK come, you know, September, October, November, you know, once we're out of the peak of the summer travel season, but they're also just limited on the number of A380 gates. So if they were able to get the plane again, and if they decide to operate it into New York, I almost think they have to consider some sort of a busing option or some way to service this plane so that passengers aren't inconvenienced the way they are now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at alternatives to New York. If they choose not to operate out of JFK, would they potentially go to Boston? Would they potentially go somewhere else on the East Coast so that they could do a same-day turnaround with this HiFly A380, which they're able to do now, but it begs the question of, like, a Boston to Paris or to London or something, one of their higher-density routes.
Yeah.
And given their expansion out of the Northeast, it seems like there is a lot of demand there.
I would think there's enough that they could reshuffle it somewhere. I guess a lot of it comes down to trying to figure out what else they have to cover these routes, because I don't think, well, last I checked, I think the Trent problem with the engines isn't going to be solved until at least the end of the year. So they've got definitely a number of months to figure out how to continue to solve this problem. I don't think it's the last time that we'll be talking about Norwegian, both on our blogs and maybe on the podcast. So I'll keep an eye on what's out there, and maybe we can have you back on again to talk about the continuing growth and struggles of Norwegian.
Yeah, the Norwegian saga. You have to follow it along. It's almost like an entertainment of its own.
I think I'll call it a win, though, that we're sitting here just a few months after the last time we recorded, and IAG has not bought Norwegian.
Yes.
I'll call that a win.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, even stories, or I guess Willie Walsh now is saying that IAG might sell their share. So even better in my eyes.
We'll certainly hope for that. But until then, thanks again for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back to wrap up this episode with this week's final two pennies. Hope you enjoyed the two segments this week. I really enjoyed finally getting to chase down Zach and go through some of his crazy travel. He's been some places that I absolutely want to go. I don't know that I'll get to them as quickly as he did, but boy, just some really awesome experiences in the air. We don't know what to think of what's going to happen with that A380 on Norwegian, but you don't have a lot of time if you want to try and track down the cheapest way to fly a Singapore suite. So keep that in mind as well, and also keep in mind that there are some problems with delays on that flight, so just make sure you got your eyes wide open going into booking a ticket on that. Let's also not forget our reminders. August 18th, new Marriott Starwood program. That's a big deal. There will be some good values once the 18th rolls around, but there's also some stuff that you want to grab now. I use the Dolphin Swan example in the intro. Just keep that in mind. Double check something. If you're thinking about booking it, this week is the time to just look and make sure you know which end is up. Last couple of things. One, I definitely want to get an ask pizza section going. Definitely want you to send in your questions via email, Twitter, at Pizza in Motion, or miles2gopodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to answer those questions on the air for you as a segment coming up. So please send those questions in any way possible. Lastly, you'll keep an eye out for some bonus episodes that you'll see coming up. I've got some fun stories to tell in shorter segments. So we're going to try launching a couple of bonus episodes that are, you know, probably 10 or 15 minutes in length. Definitely hope you'll enjoy those as well. That's a full wrap this week. I hope if you enjoyed listening that you'll take a moment to hit the subscribe button to the podcast. And if you're enjoying listening, I hope you'll take a moment to rate the podcast. By subscribing to the podcast and rating it, you help us expose the show to more people. And we definitely want to continue to grow the audience. Can't thank you enough for tuning in. I'm having a ton of fun recording the podcast. I've already got a little bit of audio saved up for next week that I recorded this week. I'll give you a hint. Gilbert from God Save the Points is coming back on to tell us about some destinations I'm almost sure you haven't heard of that are great places to consider for a future vacation. Hope you'll tune in again next week for those fun tips from Gilbert and some other stuff. Until then, we've got miles to go.